Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of the F Y'all Podcast. I am your co-host, Michael Wright, and across from me, as always, is the one and only, the legendary, the one and only C.T. Fletcher. Pops, what's the word today, sir?
Man, we got a special guest in the studio today, the one and only Jimmy House.
Damn right. This Jimmy man House is the definition of strength, discipline, and versatility. He's a pro natural bodybuilder, Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, and a record-breaking power lifter, and also a professional wrestler, Pops. This man dominates every arena that he steps into. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the F Y'all Podcast, the one and only Jimmy House.
What's going on, everybody?
Thank
you both for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, Jimmy. So I've been looking forward to having you on the show. So I'll say this. I know you and Pops have quite the relationship. I am just now getting very familiar with you and the person you are. We've been interacting online, and you are definitely an amazing human being that I'm hoping to get to learn more about as time goes on. So it is an honor to have you on the show. Pops, I'm gonna let you start it off and tell the world a little bit about the man you know, Mr. Jimmy House.
Okay, well, let me, you mentioned a bunch of his accolades, but one that stands out for me in particular that you didn't mention was that Jimmy House, I have a contest every year called Iron Wars, where the baddest of the bad compete, the baddest, strongest motherfuckers on the planet come in one place, the Valley of the Beast, and decide for, fuck Instagram and Facebook and all that shit. They get come there and really decide who's the baddest motherfucker on the planet. And Jimmy House, not only does he show up every fucking year, he brings his whole House Strong team down to support my old ass. And I don't know if I ever expressed how much that means to me, Jimmy. So I want to personally tell you in front of all eight motherfuckers watching this podcast that I fucking really, really, really appreciate that. I respect you.
Thank you.
And I'm so proud of everything that you're doing, because I know it was your dream.
Yes.
I know what your dream was. I ain't going to tell you what it is, but you're actually living it. And
Thank you.
A lot of people don't have the testicular fortitude to go after their dreams and actually live it. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. It means a lot coming from you, CT. It's my honor to be able to support you in any way I can. That's why it hurts so bad to not go to this year's Iron Wars, but Iron Wars 10.
Yeah.
The big show will definitely be there. But yeah, I think I started at Iron Wars 4 and then we went up all the way till Iron Wars 8. So like basically four or five straight years of Iron Wars. And it was interesting. I came down there as an individual competitor the first year. And then I brought a team of, I think, maybe like 20 or 25 people the second year. The third year, I think we hit like 30 or something like that. As time goes on, people started going their different ways in life. But we always try to bring a good group, at least 10 to 15 people, whether I was the only one competing or whatnot. Because for me, I remember the first time that I had basically met you, which was we had heard about the first Iron Wars. And then we lived in Arizona at the time, so it was like a 6-hour drive. I thought it was really cool. I was peaking my deadlift at the time. I just started jiu-jitsu, so I was feeling good physically. And I remember stepping into that first Iron Wars. I had pulled 700. You weren't there. 700 had fallen off the ends of the bar because we were using old school pound plates. But I had gotten up to my hips, basically, and then all the weights fell off. But then I was like, fuck it, I'm going to go for 725, go for a big PR. And then that's when you came over. But I didn't see you come over until after I had strapped up.
Yeah.
And all I hear is, pull that shit, House. And then in my head, I'm like 21 at the time. I'm like, oh, shit, that's so fucking cool. And so, And so anyways, I went for it. I remember I gave it the fight of my life. Actually, it got it to my knees and I failed. But regardless, it was a really cool opportunity. Yeah. Pull that shit, Jimmy House, forever live with my soul. And ever since then, I remember the first time that we actually talked online together, and it was me basically expressing my gratitude for A, taking the time to support my lift, but B, also just what you have done for the entire fitness industry. In the landscape of social media now, it annoys the fuck out of me, for one. But for two, you don't get to appreciate the true legends of fitness, such as CT, such as Mark Bell, such as Flex Lewis, guys like that, guys that really paved the way before social media and reels really became a thing. Because truly where we're at now in fitness would not be a thing if it wasn't for CT. And CT, in my opinion, CT and Ronnie Coleman are like the two people together who I try to model my intensity and dedication and just straight raw power after. That's why when we were at the Houston Expo a couple years ago and you guys met like right when I was in the middle, that was like the coolest
thing.
I remember standing in line actually, and I was with my friend Matt. I was like, it'd be so cool if like CT and Ronnie took a picture together. And then, you know, by the grace of God, you come up like right then and there. That was God's work in my opinion. And you and Ronnie together, that's such a legendary combo. But all that to say, it's my honor to support your event simply because you allowed the pathway for me to meet and build a friendship and now almost like a father-son type of relationship with my childhood hero, Bill Goldberg, who has been a guest on the show, who's a really, really good friend of yours. And made me really happy that you guys got to hang out this past weekend. And that's something that I'll forever be in debt to you for, where you'll ever have such a special place in my heart. And I always think about you every single day. And, you know, just it's been an honor to be able to build a relationship, you know, being multiple states away, but to look up to you as a father figure and to know that if it hadn't been for you, my childhood dreams would have never been a reality. And it's just, it's so interesting to look to where I'm at now, you know, being able to be within arm's reach of Bill, being able to help either his son or himself whenever he needs me, and to build that relationship. And that wouldn't have started had it not been for you putting in a word for me. And I still remember the message to this day. I mean, I'm like a 22-year-old kid or something like that. CT eventually messaged me saying, hey, Bill asked about you. And I told him that, you know, you're an outstanding individual and all these great things. And I think Goldberg was trying to get a feel for me at the time, you know, like just who is this guy basically. And CT just did an amazing job of showing him that I'd like to think that I'm more than just a fan. Like Goldberg has had such a deep grounded impact on me from a kid standpoint that I can't even put it into words. A fan doesn't give it enough justice. This man has had such an impact on my life, and just that wouldn't be possible was for CT. So thank you.
And some people say you don't want to meet your heroes.
Right.
But I am sure, positive, because Bill's like my brother. Mm-hmm. And I know that it was a great thing for you to meet your
heroes. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember it specifically. It was the 2019 Mr. Olympia. You were there as well.
Yeah.
He was doing a meet and greet at the booth. And I remember, you know, hundreds of people in line. And when I was building up, getting super anxious, I started crying a little bit. And then he sees me, and then it was just, it's so interesting to see somebody on TV your entire life and then see them right in front of you. And it's just a bigger in life type of experience. And immediately just started crying because he was talking to me about how proud he was of me and how, you know, he's passing me the torch and all these just surreal things with the relationship that CT and I had. And I always say, because that whole don't meet your heroes thing, my two examples that I always, always, always use are CT and Goldberg, hands down. Like, that's true. I've heard of some instances like that where people have bad experiences, but CT and Goldberg are my prime examples as to the individuals that are heroes, individuals all across the world, and always show up. For example, I think one of the coolest instances for me with you was when you had went to my first ADCC trials in Burbank back in 2019, and you were dealing with bad arthritis at the time, I believe, in your foot, and your feet were swollen. Yeah. You had stood there for 2-3 hours until my first match. Thank fucking God I won. I've never been under such type of pressure in my life. But I remember standing next to you, and he had so many people come up to him, obviously, Gordon Ryan being one of them. Gordon Ryan's a fan of CT. Right. That's legit, right? But amongst all the people coming up to him, normal, average, great, whatever, every single time, how you doing, CT? I'm blessed. You know, thank you so much for the kind words. Always just like in every single time. And now that I've grown a little bit more, I have a better understanding of what that's like, but I still want to strive to get to your level. But the way you show up, regardless of how you're internally feeling, is what separates you from the rest of the pack. And so I remember when you're answering messages to people on Facebook or Instagram or whatever. And I remember I had some friends back home in Arizona say, like, I bet CT has like people answer his messages from him or whatever. But I stood there and watched you answer like these individual messages. And I know you can't get to all of them, but you're giving your time and attention to these people that are reaching out to you, telling you their life problems or asking you how to get through whatever situation. And to me, it's like that behind the scenes stuff that's not on camera that doesn't get a lot of credit, but if I can give you the credit on camera, I would like to, because not many people know about that.
And Goldberg is the same way. Yeah. Bill was the same way. He was, you know, Tyrone Spahn, ass beater extraordinaire, and Mark Henry, Goldberg, and me.
Yeah, that was legendary.
I'm like, this is a, I'm not supposed to be in this company. These are legends, right? Legit legends. And so
as are you.
Stop. It was just an unbelievable honor for me to be standing.
Yeah, that's so cool.
And to have Bill Goldberg talk about me like I'm on his level. Mm-hmm. Oh, Jimmy, that's
yeah. He looks up to you so much,
man. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out why. He is such a great dude.
Jimmy, I'll say this. I'm glad you had a good experience meeting your hero, because when I met him, he'd been treating me like shit ever since. I'm glad he's nice to you. Damn sure ain't nice to me. But anyway, let's start from the beginning. Let's talk about your upbringing, where you're from. How'd your childhood come up? Because I want to kind of lead up to where you are now.
Yeah, so I'm from Glendale, Arizona. Born and raised there my whole entire life. I only moved to Austin, Texas just about 2 years ago now. So I'm an Arizonan at heart. I started doing martial arts when I was 3. I've always been very, very active. My dad has pushed me to try to do things to get me out to make friends and improve me physically, improve me mentally, going down to like various IQ tests and math tests and so on and so forth that I've been taking since the age of 3. Wow. Like as I was a kid, he's been really trying to mold me into the best intellectual and physical specimen that he could. And I have to give a lot of credit to my dad because, you know, had it not been for what he had showed me early on, this conversation wouldn't be happening. I wouldn't have the goals that I do now. So I'm very grateful for those first few years of life where he pushed me into athletics, pushed me out of my shell. I'm an introvert naturally. I'm an only child. So, you know, when it comes to having conversations like this, this is not something that came naturally to me, you know, a decade ago. But all that to say, after getting into martial arts at a young age, he also started me lifting at a very young age too. And that's something that I've talked about a little bit, but not too many people know about. I started lifting my first weight at age 5. It was a Sports Authority weight set that he had bought. It was maybe like a 5-pound little aluminum bar and 10 pound pig iron plates. Yep, yeah. You know? And that's, I remember when you started those competitions, it just brought me back to childhood because I had those same plates. It was, had it been 2000, 2001 or whatever. And yeah, curling, pressing, squatting, benching, just like all the basic movements. He was just kind of teaching me how to do it to his best ability. And so from age 5 up until age 15, I worked out with my dad every single day on the weekends, upper body on Saturdays, lower body on Sundays. And I played my sports and went to school during the week. Did baseball, did football. I played on the 7th grade basketball team. I averaged 30 seconds a game. That's like my one athletic failure that I'll attest to.
Yeah, they couldn't give you a full minute.
Yeah. No, not at all. They put me at center one time against this kid that in 8th grade, he was like 6'11". I was all of like 5'4". Just because like I was a little bit stronger, but I had no other skills. That led into wrestling in high school. Wrestling in high school led into powerlifting, then jiu-jitsu, then strict curl, and then now professional wrestling. So I spread through it quite a bit, but growing up an only child and getting a lot of time early on with my dad has kind of molded me into what I would call the intellectual that I am today, as well as the athlete that I am, being as well versatile as I can be, as well rounded as I can be. Powerlifting was great, but at the same time, I love like the athletic side of things, running, jumping, doing the splits, backflips, whatever. And now bleeding into pro wrestling, the other 100%. Because the other thing I didn't touch on was when I was 3, I only had a select handful of TV shows, Nickelodeon, Rugrats, whatever. But then also I had wrestling.
Yeah.
But WWE at the time, this was the Attitude Era, the Attitude Era, and so there was a lot of raunchy stuff happening, you know, on WWE.
You don't say.
Right. Yeah. And granted, it's great entertainment, but for a 3-year-old, you know, my parents just didn't want me to watch it. However, and this is where God works in interesting ways, because the one thing I was allowed to watch was WCW. And the one person I was mainly encouraged to look at was Goldberg. Mm-hmm. Right. And I remember watching him as a kid. And this is where everything that I've done athletically, he's had an impact on me. But I'm watching this individual and, you know, I always think about a thousand different ways to describe it, but the best way to put it is he's just a superhero.
Yep.
Humility, what he looks like, what his athleticism is, intensity. But when he's around like the innocent civilians, he's like the people they come to, they want to be around. He holds a kid up on his shoulders. And I remember being 3 years old and watching him hold 3, 4, 5 year olds up like this on his shoulders, like letting them hold the title, stuff like that. And I used to be so envious because I wish that I had the opportunity to be one of those kids. And I'm kind of skipping through here, but we fast forward literally 20 years later, after CT had introduced us, he had got me tickets to SmackDown. And now fast forward to the end of that SmackDown. Now I'm that 3-year-old kid in my 23-year-old body. He's giving me a hug on the barricade. And then that was still to this day, like one of the best days, if not the best days of my life, because I was that 3-year-old kid just 20 years later. And, you know, the fact that he was able to come back after 12 years removed from the business, and then me being at a point to where I was old enough to kind of be at these events and be around and experience that was just so cool. And I remember when it happened, I turned around and I just screamed like I hit a deadlift PR, but then I started crying again. But you know, actually the first 5-6 times that I spoke to Goldberg, like I cried every single time. I only took me to moving to Texas to actually get comfortable with, you know, this is actually a friend. This is like a normal circumstance, but yeah, so that's the basis of my childhood. You got wrestling and Goldberg, and then you got sports, and you got weight training, and then you got a lot of heavy emphasis on school and being as good as I can at my grades and so on and so forth.
What about mama?
Yes. So
about dad.
Yeah. So my mom is the most extroverted, cute, high energy Filipino lady that you'd ever met. That's where this side of me comes out a little bit. Like I have that side of my mom, and that's where I can talk to people, because she's like one of the top salesmen in jewelry in her company. Every single company she's ever worked for, she's been one of the top. And she's from the Philippines. So there's a lot that even I don't know about her upbringing, but being around two individuals like my mom and like my dad, I know my mom in particular coming from basically a third world country, especially like how she grew up in it. There's a lot of mental will and fortitude and willingness to never give up and get yourself to a much better situation that she was able to come to. And then, you know, use that as a way to have me get born into the world. So my mom, especially nowadays, I would say my relationship with my mom has grown a lot more closer than what it was in my childhood. She does such an amazing job of supporting my wildest dreams, whether that's being a superhero to millions of kids, being a pro wrestler, sumo wrestling yesterday, like whatever it is, you know what I mean?
And sumo
wrestling? Yeah, I did sumo wrestling at Barbell Grade. We'll talk about that later. But just whatever I'm doing, even if it's something that goes against the traditional American standard of go to college, get that job, you know, have that safety net, she supports me to chase what she truly believes that I'm capable of. And that in itself has allowed me to continue to chase these ridiculous goals, and it's become do or die. But a support system like what my mom gives me is just, and my fiance and my best friend in the back, that support system has allowed me to continue pursue these things, not have a second thought and not care what anybody thinks. And a result, I'm very proud of how far I've come.
Well, you should be.
Thank you.
Absolutely should be, man. Like I said before, not many people had a testicular fortitude to go after that dream. If that dream ain't fucking huge and scary a little bit, then it ain't big enough.
Yeah.
But I do want to touch on what you were just saying about your mom as far as, you know, allowing you to live your dream and not be kind of stuck in that American dream of just going to college. That's the thing, you know, me and my wife try to do with our kids is want them to experience certain things. When I came up, and you know, no fault to my mother at all, but that's all she knew. Like, you got to go to college. You got to get a job.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And so now I find myself in this spot, being 40, almost 47 years old, it's like now I'm really starting to live my dream and things that I really like doing because, you know, my parents, that's all they knew. You got to get an education. And again, got the education and that's great, but I never really got a chance to experience my dream. So hearing you talk about that is amazing that you get to do all these amazing things. Your parents have supported you in that. Not saying that my parents didn't support me, but it's again, they had us stuck in that American dream of college, job.
Right.
That was supposed to be the end of it. So I know it has to be absolutely amazing to have that kind of support in your life to have all these people backing you.
Were you spoiled?
my mom always
only
says,
child.
My mom always says, he's a good spoil. He's a good spoil. Okay. I'm an only child, and you know, my dad worked really hard to make his money, so did my mom. So yeah, whether it's whatever Eagles merchandise I wanted, I'm an Eagles fan, by the way, or Under Armour shirt or whatever, or wrestling figure, I usually didn't have that hard of a time getting it. But with that said, a good spoiled in the sense that at least I try to keep myself grounded. Yeah. For example, one thing I'm very grateful for my parents for is I had lived with him up till pretty much age 25 before I moved to Austin. Okay. This is my first time living on my own. And in that situation, you know, there's a lot of peer pressure or whatever to move out right away and go about living an adult life or whatever. But I'm so thankful that they allowed me to embrace that, because during that time I was lifting my ass off, training my ass off, jiu-jitsuing my ass off, and really molding myself into who I am now, somebody that can kind of walk his own path now amongst some of the greats. And I look up to you and see what you've done and think I can do that. Right. But those years from say like 18 to 25 was where the majority of my growth happened athletically, mentally, you know, as a coach. And had I been forced to go to a career job and work that 9 to 5 and take time away from what my true passions were, who knows where I would be, but I just don't think I would be here. So I'm super grateful that my parents allowed me to do that, because I didn't take it for granted. I still worked very, very hard in my given passions, but because I took a little bit extra time to grow up per se, now I'm very grateful that I can spread my wings and fly on my own, but also in a direction that I genuinely want to be going towards.
Okay. I do have a question. So I want to go back. You said you wrestled in high school, right?
Yes, sir.
And I asked this question because I had a lot of friends that wrestled in high school, and we had Shelton Benjamin on here and talked about his wrestling. Now you tell me, was it the same for you? Training for wrestling, according to Shelton Benjamin, a lot of people I know were saying that it's the hardest training they've ever been through. Is it the same for you?
Yeah, 1,000%. From a intensity standpoint, from a conditioning standpoint, physicality, it by far outweighs anything else I've ever done. However, what I say now doing pro wrestling is that from a skill standpoint, my personal opinion is that pro wrestling in some ways is a little bit harder.
Oh,
because not cardiovascularly or physically necessarily, but from the standpoint of, and Shelton is one of the best. So I'm going to use him as an example. You take all the physical skill sets of wrestling, folk style wrestling, and then you take that and now you have to expand upon it. Acting, storytelling, psychology, charisma, promo cutting, you know, all these different things while learning how to make it an art and make it a work per se. In front of the big screen, that in itself is wrestling, but now expanding upon it with all these different skills that just a amateur wrestler doesn't necessarily have to think about. So that's what I say to a lot of people, is that pro wrestling has been the hardest thing for me to actually feel any bit of confidence about. Up until maybe like 3 weeks ago, I was like, I truly don't know what I'm doing. I'm just going directions. You know what I mean? Just because there's so many things going on. And as soon as I think I'm kind of getting it. And then Dustin or my good friend Ricky Saints that just debuted on NXT, they point out something. I'm like, God damn. I was so happy about whatever, and then there's like this big hole that I miss, and like it's just crazy that their minds for these things. Your average fan would never necessarily pick it out, but the mind that they have for how to make it look as realistic as possible to tell the best story is still to this day something that blows my mind. A friend of mine and a mentor of mine is Kofi Kingston.
Oh, yeah.
And I met him in Austin. And to this day, I'll send him matches and he'll send me time-stamped critiques of, say, of a 15, 20-minute match. And some of the things that he picks out are like the most minuscule things. But on the big screen, those are the things that you look at it and you know it looks really good, but you can't really tell why. But it's those little things that, say, Kofi points out, or Dustin or Ricky, where it's like, oh, wow, I had never like thought of that. It's like just the littlest things that people do, and they make it look as if they're not even thinking about it. But that's why I think professional wrestling is amongst the most impressive athletic things to do, truly.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of people talk shit, but I was saying this yesterday when we interviewed the Hurt Syndicate. Mm-hmm. Try it.
Right.
Try it.
Yeah.
You know, I tried for a while and I loved it. But it was a matter of, I had small kids and they had to have health insurance, and being a, you know, if you a pro wrestler back then, I don't know how it is now. Well, you didn't have no health insurance. Right. Nothing was guaranteed.
Yeah.
If you got fucked up, then just shit out of luck. Kids had to eat.
Yeah,
true. So I went ahead and stayed at the post office.
Yeah, you would have been a great wrestler.
But it was.
Everybody we've had on this show, 100%. All the wrestlers we had on this show would always say that if he had stuck to it, he would have been amazing. We were talking to MVP about that yesterday.
And he was
CT would have
been
absolutely amazing.
Easily.
Just the promo part of it, just him talking and bringing people into the arena would have been.
Oh my gosh, it would have been amazing.
A whole nother level.
Who is the best, in your opinion, because I asked Hurtson the same thing yesterday, who is the best promo guy? Give me top five promos in all of professional wrestling, present, past, whatever, just...
I would say, and I'm going to speak from the people that had, you know, an actual impact on me.
Mm-hmm. This is your list. Whatever you want.
I think Rock has to be the clear cut for many different reasons, but Rock is definitely, like, to me, he's like the Gordon Ryan of charisma.
Man.
Because he's just like, my gosh. You know? Then it becomes John Cena, a very close second, depending upon what flavor you like, in my opinion.
He was on MVP.
Yeah, 100% John Cena, for sure. I think after that, those are the two main people that I focus on. I honestly think Stone Cold and his own flavor was really, really good. You know what I mean? He wasn't necessarily like spitting bars per se, but the way that he had the whole audience at his hands with his various little slogans. Yeah, exactly. Like that in itself is really, really impressive. I think that you probably have to put Ric Flair in there, even though I haven't seen a lot of his stuff just because of my age. Ric Flair. And then another big one that people model themselves after is actually my coach's dad, Dusty Rhodes. So
he was waiting for you to say
right. Yeah, you got Dusty on there, man. You got to put Dusty.
So let's jump into the world of professional wrestling since we're there already. What has been the biggest struggle for you as far as professional wrestling training? Has it been the promos? Because clearly the athleticism is all in your wheelhouse. Yeah, so I'm sure that's not an issue. That, so what's been the toughest part of the training so far?
I really appreciate it. Yeah. To me, it's understanding the psychology behind it.
Yeah.
And understanding that for example, Ricky Saints, he just got onto NXT. He's one of the most well-known guys in just a few weeks. I've had the honor of training him for the last year. He's been a client of mine in person in Austin. And he gets compared to The Rock a lot. Maybe I'm going to put him in there as an honorable mention. Actually, he gets compared to
he's amazing, man.
Yeah, he gets compared to The Rock a lot. His style and his charisma and his promo cutting. He doesn't like it, but it is a compliment at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So, for example, when he is at training with us and he's at practice and he starts breaking down particular things, the way he thinks about this essential buildup throughout the course of the match. And this is something that you're kind of subliminally keeping in mind as you're going through the physical aspects. How do you sell something here? How do you sell something 10 minutes from now? What story are you trying to tell now versus later? You know, what is the correct way to sell something to where it still looks realistic when you hit X move? There's so many different things to think about. And the best way to put it is it's very comparable to like a video game health bar above your head. Yeah. That's one of the things I like to rely on. That and just movie fight scenes. That was one comparison that was made to me that I like to compare to. But the hardest thing for me has been to, because physically, let's say for example, even if I'm in great shape, I do well from the start to the begin to the end. Physically, there's no lack of conditioning or lack of physicality or athleticism. But it's how do I display that same type of athleticism with the story that was told the last 20 minutes. That's been one of the bigger issues I've tried to learn to overcome. In my last match, I did a better job of that from what my coach told me, but it's understanding that you can't go zero to hero. You have to be able to make things make sense. You can't just do moves because they look cool or because so-and-so did it. Everything has to have its place and make sense. And up until now, because I'll be honest with you, and this is where in the pro wrestling world I get flack. But I didn't really watch a lot of wrestling. I watched a lot of Goldberg because of his impact on me. And then once Goldberg came out, I liked John Cena a lot because he did that same kind of thing for kids. He was like that superhero figure. So those were my two main references. However, this is not my opinion, but the opinion of your average wrestling fan is that they're not the best wrestlers to watch, right? Yeah. And so now coming into wrestling, trying to make this my new skill that I'm trying to improve, my general knowledge per se of what like quote good wrestling is, isn't up to date with somebody that's been watching every single wrestler, every single pay-per-view their whole entire life. So there's a lot of like kind of learning on the fly. And now that I'm more of a student of the game, I go back and watch some of the matches or some of the wrestlers that I didn't think were that entertaining as a kid, but I can see how good a lot of these people are, whether it's Randy Orton or Shawn Michaels or Triple H, people like that. And so you know, I think ultimately for me, it's understanding who I am as a character, which I've done half the battle. I'm myself. Yeah. So it's basically taking myself. Goldberg does a great job of this and amplifying it.
Yeah.
So, and then having essentially switches like that, you kind of play like a radio or something like that, like up and down and up and down to take the audience on this roller coaster of a ride. And, you know, it's crazy. When I talk to my fiance, I think one of the things that she says is the most mind blowing about it is the memorization that takes place in the ring to like be able to do a 30-minute match or whatever, to do all these spots. But then a step above that, being able to do all these spots, but then to be able to communicate to each other in the ring, but then make it look like you're not.
Yeah.
Right. And that to me is a skill that I'm starting to learn, but the way that some of these people do it, it's just, it's mind blowing sometimes. So without exposing the business too much, I would say those are like the 2-3 main things that I really want to become good at, because from my 2 heroes, they made a lot of money and were really successful without having to do a lot of crazy, dangerous moves. And to me, with my body of work and me not necessarily being young in the business, like 21, 22, 23, I need to work really, really hard on my character and the stories that I tell in my matches, and then have a move set that looks really good, but also keeps myself and my opponent safe.
Well, sir, you were being trained by, in my opinion, one of the best wrestlers, period.
Yes.
Dustin 100%. Rhodes, I don't believe, in my opinion, does not get all the credit he should get for his wrestling ability, especially as long as he's been doing
it. Oh, my gosh, yes.
100%. To see that man still wrestling and still going and giving these young boys hell in that ring, that man does not get enough credit. So you may not have come up in the world of professional wrestling, but you are being trained by somebody who has lived and and bled in this industry. True. So you were clearly on the right track. And he's doing an amazing job with you, man.
Yeah,
so.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Working with Dustin has been a huge honor. I was very, very fortunate. Another connection that CT gave me, Brian Cage.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so again, CT. Had CT not linked Brian and I up, Brian would have never told me that Dustin was in Austin. Maybe I would have found out eventually, but I found out shortly after moving there. And then I was first to sign up at his camp that he does at his school. And then fast forward now. 3 weeks ago, I won Dustin's championship. I'm the first good guy to win his championship.
Taking one of my questions away.
Sorry. We'll leave that. But yeah, it's a true honor because Dustin himself, again, has become a bit of a father figure throughout this time. He's such a good-hearted person, very funny, very witty. But his wrestling mind, of course, is just mind-blowing. And my first 2 matches that I did coming back from my injury, sorry if we're answering questions here.
Yeah, sorry.
No, go ahead. Saying this to say my first 2 matches coming back from my injury, as soon as I get through the back, he has like immediate critique for me. You know, and I understand that because he has a high expectation or a high standard or thinks my potential is high. Mm-hmm. So I very much appreciate it. Thank you. And so this last match, though, he was ecstatic about it and said it was pay-per-view worthy and all these great things. So it was really, really cool to have these goals to work on that he gave me, such as selling, such as not rushing things. I think that's another thing, not rushing things. And I can talk about what that means, but those were my 2 main checklist goals in the last 2 months from him, from his feedback. And then being able to actually show him the improvement there, show him that I'm coachable. I think that's the biggest thing, especially in WWE. Like, are you coachable? Are you moldable? You know, that type of thing. So it's good to know that I have the general assets that would be valuable to something like a WWE, but it's just a matter of continuing to work and trust those around me.
You're going to use Jimmy House as your wrestling name.
Yeah, until further notice.
Okay, now, finishing move.
So
you have a signature finishing move.
Yes. So I have maybe more than I need to, but I have four. So signature, finisher, it kind of gets blurred. Signature is gonna be more so like a powerful move that doesn't necessarily finish the match. Finisher is like your finisher. You should finish the match, nobody should kick out of it. But I have the spear for obvious reasons.
Yep.
Goldberg. And I try to mimic how he does it as best as I can in my 200-pound frame versus his 300-pound frame. So not as much like burst, but as best as I can, I try to run through the person as opposed to just kind of touch and fall off.
Right, right.
Because I love the way he did the spear.
He always had one of the best ones, and it was just the intensity, the impact. It looked real.
And that's the thing.
So. Hey, this is not being put shade on anybody, but a lot of spears, you see people doing this.
Yeah, right.
But Goldberg's was so And like he was literally running through you.
Yeah, exactly.
Literally running through. Yeah. And it stood out for me being an ex-football player. It's like, that's how you do it, right?
Yeah.
That's how you do it. So he clearly, in my opinion, has got one of the best spears, period, in wrestling.
Yeah, yeah.
Spear?
So spear, I made up my own move.
I probably really did it,
but at least like I thought of it first in my head before I saw it somewhere else. Actually, my coach, Coach Eric at Dustin's school, he kind of gave me the idea for it. He's like, what if you run in like a spear, but instead of like, run through them, you pick them up and then drive them down? So it's kind of like this spear spine buster hybrid set up like a spear. I run at them. And then instead of running through them, I drive them up almost like a double leg and then drive them straight down like that. So I call that one house arrest. My last name is House. And then there's a submission move that I do is basically a bulldog choke and jujitsu or MMA, but that one, I've called it trap house. I don't know if it's going to work or not, but our house trap or one of the other, but it's just basically like a bulldog choke. And my last match, I did it with a kendo stick. It's nice because it does a good job of showing both people's faces,
the
vascularity and muscles and so on and so forth. So it's like a good submission for wrestling, and it allows them to find a way out if we need to. So that's a good one. And then I haven't been able to use this in a match yet, but I did ask Goldberg if he was okay with me using the jackhammer.
Okay.
And he did give me the honor of, so I want to be able to use that in a match here in the near future. You know what I mean?
Nobody's used it since. He used it. Right. I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
You know, I watch wrestling all the time. But I haven't seen anybody.
I don't think so. Before. And to me, it's like everybody kind of steals everybody's thing in wrestling. You know, it's hard to like truly create something. But for me, when it comes to Goldberg spear or even the jackhammer, if it was ever thought of as I was stealing it from him, I wouldn't do it. Number one. But number two, if there's any way to pay homage to the person that like is the sole reason why I'm doing this, things like that to me have a much more deeper meaning than just what it looks like to the audience. You know, he's really the reason why I'm doing this. He's the one that inspired me to try to do this in the first place. This would have never been, there's the SmackDown that I told you about.
Talk about pumped.
Yeah, exactly. I try to find little ways like that to try to give back as best as I can.
So let me ask you, we've had a few wrestlers on this show and they always talk about that light bulb moment, and it could be years into their actual career where that it just clicks and something's like, this is it. Have you had that light bulb moment yet where like everything is really starting to come together?
You know, like in the cartoons where like a light bulb's like flickering and there's like a mosquito or something hovering around. That's kind of more so what I would describe it as for me. It's like it wants to come on, but like it's already it's not even getting close. We got to change the battery. We got to change the light bulb, but it's like fluttering a little bit. Yeah, I don't want to say that the light bulb has clicked because I'm still so new to it. Yeah. Like I said, I started technically 3 years ago learning in Arizona under my coach in Arizona, Don Vitale. But with the two major knee injuries, I lost about a year and a half. So, and I now only have 4 live matches under my belt. So I'm still so green. And I try to do my best to put together the advice that I have from all my various mentors. But at the end of the day, I know from the people that I have talked to and seeing what their mind is able to create, I have so, so far to go, you know? And if I do put on a match, for example, that looks good, I'm definitely happy about it. But also, I think I'm still at the point to where, okay, I can put on a match that looks entertaining based upon my understanding of the basics of what I need to do, as well as just listening to my coach or the person I'm working with to accomplish what we need to accomplish. But as far as like having your head on a swivel and being able to make adjustments on the fly and change things in the match based upon what happens in live goes or what the fans are doing, right? That's a skill that I'm very far from getting that I'm working towards. But I think once I actually feel confident there, I'll start to have that light bulb flick on a little bit more consistently. But I remember more recently, I think my biggest win was just being in the match and slowing down enough, like Dustin had talked about, to actually hear and listen to the fans and be mentally calm enough to think of halfway witty things to say to the audience to get them involved and get them engaged. That was a personal win for me. So again, like little flickers, but the whole light bulb hasn't necessarily come on yet.
Gotcha.
I got one for you, Jimmy.
Okay.
Now, when I was a kid, which was 600 years ago, one of my favorite finishing moves I like to see the guys do was a figure four leg.
Like, oh, yeah, yeah.
I want you to do a figure five.
The hell is
the
that?
First, yeah.
Well,
with all the experience that Jimmy has, wrestling, jujitsu, yeah. I'm sure you can figure out a fucking figure five leg.
Like, where's the fifth leg come from?
Hey,
I'm Asian. I don't.
Hey, invent the motherfucker. Right. Whatever you got to okay. do, I want to see a figure five fucking leg lock.
Okay.
And watch.
Yes, sir.
Figure five, they're going to say, ain't nobody done this shit in the history. Fuck figure four. You're going to throw something else in there. I don't give a fuck how you do it. But the figure five leg lock, see Jimmy Howe's signature move.
Okay.
Heard it here first.
All right.
Let me say
right.
this.
I'm going to work really
this
hard.
This is the same man that tried to tell Shelton Benjamin.
Damn he's right.
Change really? His character and turn him into El Pantero. And his whole gimmick was walking around slapping people in the face.
Hey. Did Shelton say he started incorporating that shit? He sure did. He said, watch my back. You see, I incorporated some CT. I want to see a fucking figure five leg lock yes, from sir. Jimmy House.
All right.
You go. You figure it out.
I promise. I'll send it to you as soon as I figure it out.
Yeah. All right. So you brought up your knee injury, and you had a very catastrophic knee injury. Yeah. Walk us through that process. How did it happen, and what was the recovery like getting back into the ring after? What was it 9 months you were out?
Yeah, about nine months on each one.
Okay.
So there were two. So there was one about 8 months before I moved to Austin, and that one was me training with one of my favorite training partners back home. Essentially, we were doing takedowns at the very, very end of the practice, and every single injury I've ever had in jiu-jitsu has been like the last round, or whatever, you know. And anyways, but we're doing takedowns, and he's a big individual, about 270 pounds, and he essentially goes for what would be referred to as like an outside trip while having upper body control. And whereas ideally you kind of come down low to the outside of my ankle, he had just kind of misplaced it and came directly into the side of my knee. But the thing that kind of made that one catastrophic was he came in with momentum and force, and his body weight came in this way. That's where I heard the first couple pops, and then gravity took its course, and then we both landed on the ground. So like it was boom, boom. And that's where, so the first one was full PCL tear, partial ACL tear, three partial tears in my MCL, and then I somehow fractured my femur partially in that process as well. I always say this when people ask me about it. I always just preach how important mobility work is when it comes to grappling, jiu-jitsu, professional wrestling, because that instance in particular, if you go to my reels, it should be one of the pinned, the incident itself. But had I not had the ability to internally rotate and maintain strength in this position, let's say if I was immobile and I couldn't do this, his body weight in theory would have just completely came through my leg entirely, and my foot would be more here than my knee going here. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So even though it was a really bad injury, my mobility that I've been working on very diligently at the time has allowed me to go with some of that pressure to where the main brunt of that force came after we hit the mat, as opposed to like still while in midair.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think the mobility stuff, because a lot of times people talk about doing mobility to rehab things, and I agree that is a place, but also it allows you to disperse momentum and weight in different areas of your body that are strong to avoid injuries going from really bad to like catastrophic, you know? So I'm very grateful for that. Healed that without surgery. I was really big into knees. Thank you. Yeah. I was really big into knees over toes at the time. Ben Patrick, I had been really diving down the rabbit hole of how he rehabbed his knees and the people that he works with. And I started to really try to scale all those movements back that he does really, really well, and then progress them forward over the course of the next 8 months. That one in particular, as I said, without surgery, without stem cells,
incredible.
Without peptides.
Incredible.
Thank you. I appreciate it. But that's where the second one, I actually gained a lot of perspective, because coming out of that first one, I was like, you know what? Ben Patrick says I can do this without surgery. I'm going to do this without surgery. So I did. And I got back to deadlifting over 800 pounds and not competing, but training with the best jiu-jitsu team in the world at New Wave. I had a good handful of rounds with Gordon Ryan after I'd rehab my knee, you know, and starting the professional wrestling and things like that. And the knee held up generally well. However, there was a slight catch that would happen from time to time on the inside of my knee, which I believed to be what I guess was my meniscus at the time, but I just didn't know it. And so about a year after I cleared myself from the first injury is when I went back to Arizona, and unfortunately with the same friend Yeah, this one though, it wasn't as visually catastrophic. It was actually a really subtle position, but then the aftermath was much worse. Wow. The first one, after he took me down like that, I somehow was able to stand up on my own and walk away from it. Man. The second one though, after essentially he had me what's called half guard, where he's locking my leg down, my singular leg. He was pinching on it to try to keep me from moving, and I was trying to step over his leg to pass his guard. But the problem is, because he was pinching, my knee didn't have the ability to rotate. Okay. So my decision to step over and turn essentially twisted my knee as he's pinching and hipping into me to keep that from happening. So it wasn't a submission necessarily. It wasn't a takedown. It was just the tightness and restriction of that position that put enough torque on my knee to then tear my meniscus. It was a grade 3 bucket handle tear.
Wow.
And yeah. And so that one itself audibly sounded like me trying to take that branch and snap it in half. It like sounded like a tree branch snapping like that. It was very loud. Yeah. All the other groups had like stopped because they had heard this audible sound. And I remember the first thought when that happened, I was just like, why? You know, it's like the first one took forever to get back. Yeah. And then this one, I knew right away that it was worse. And as soon as I try to get up a little bit, I just physically cannot. Mm-hmm. So that's when, once we got the MRI back and we saw that the meniscus had that bucket handle tear, essentially what that is, or well, the place of meniscus to begin with, is that the meniscus acts as a shock absorber in the knee. And so when that's not in proper place or flipped out of place, like a bucket handle tear, you're bound to run into that issue again and again and again, arthritis and whatnot later on. Right. So then you have two options. The first one is to remove it, which is a much shorter recovery time, like 6 to 8 weeks, very short. Or you could go to repair it, which is a much longer. You keep the meniscus, so you keep that shock absorber, which is very important for, say, wrestling.
Yeah.
But it's much longer, and there's a chance that it could re-injure, in which case you'd probably just remove it at that point anyways. Yeah. So what I did was I ran a poll on my Instagram, and I said, you know, what's your guys' advice? Should I, you know, get surgery on this meniscus, or should I repair or remove it? All the jiu-jitsu people said remove it. However, I individually texted all my wrestling friends, Goldberg, Brian, Kofi, Ricky, Dustin. Every single one of them, based upon their experiences, said repair it. Mm. So it was actually really interesting because the jiu-jitsu crowd said remove it. It's going to tear anyways. Just remove it. It's way better, blah, blah, blah. And my reasoning for that as to why they think that is because in jiu-jitsu, you're putting those submission or those positions so often. Yep. So I don't know if it's essentially that the repair is low success rate as much as it is jiu-jitsu just constantly push you in positions again and again and again to re-tear it.
Yeah.
Whereas in professional wrestling, like I talked about, you need the meniscus, you need that shock absorption, right? But also because professional wrestling is what it is, generally you can keep things in a safe environment to at least like not re-injure or something like that. I could tell my opponent, hey, let's not do this move because I don't necessarily trust this here. Versus in jiu-jitsu, you can't really do that because it's a full go. Yeah. So I ended up getting the surgery. Now, this is where, again, my perspective changes a little bit from the first to the second, because the first one I went into it like, you know, I'm going to repair this without surgery. The second one, though, because the meniscus isn't going to flip itself back into place, it's like, okay, I need to really do something here. I need to do it fast. So we went with the repair because of, you know, Goldberg's opinion, Dustin's, and so on and so forth. Now, after I come out of that, it's like, okay, how do I expedite this process even more so, never having surgery before, but trying to get back to the ring as soon as possible, because I felt as though I was reaching a ton of momentum in wrestling right before that, and then it was cut off, you know? So then that's where one of my clients that I'm very, very grateful to work with, his name is Brigham Bueller. He works at Ways to Well in Austin, Texas. It's essentially like a stem cell rehabilitation. They do a lot of different things like blood work and IVs and stuff like that. It's really next level stuff. He's been on Joe Rogan 3 times. He's, wow. You know, he's friends with Trump and he's done all these amazing things. He's gaining a lot of momentum. But I had the honor to work with him. And when he saw that I had hurt myself, he had offered right away to let me do the stem cell treatment with Ways to Well. And on top of that, and this is where like I'm publicly admitting that I'm not natty anymore, because I also did BPC at the end of that too. So I did the stem cells 2 rounds of that, and then I did the BPC 157 at the end of that as well. So first time, no enhancements, no surgery. The second time, surgery with stem cells with the BPC. And people ask me like, how much do I think, you know, the surgery and the stem cells helped in comparison to the first. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for me to give you an accurate answer because The first one was an entirely different injury with different circumstances. This one, it would be easier to tell you if I had surgery before and not done the stem cells. But what I can say is, in comparison to the first rehab process, there was a lot less volume of work that I had to do from a rehabilitation standpoint on this knee. And I felt as though the healing process wasn't as slowed down because I wasn't doing as much work. There was a lot more up and down from the surgery, whereas the first one without was much more linear. But this one itself, with the help of the stem cells and the BPC at the end, I think allowed me to get away with less work at the beginning while I needed it to heal. And then once I was ready to go, then it just helped complement the rehab exercises that I already had the knowledge of.
Yeah. So we got about, oh, go ahead, Bob.
I'm going to tell you how to do the figure five.
Okay.
You got to do it in a tag team match.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's smart. Okay.
Your tag team match. Yeah, and when that motherfucker's partner come in there to break it up, and in the pin and grab his ass.
Okay.
And that's where your fifth leg, okay, five come in at.
Got it.
So you got to, you know, then you have both of them motherfuckers tapping out.
That's smart. Like, I like
hey,
that.
Hey, yeah, I never seen that shit before. That's true. In your house. Okay. It's a bad motherfucker, man. A figure five. I knew I was going to figure it out.
Yeah. I like all that. Okay.
We got about 10 minutes left. So yes, I do want to touch on the coaching aspect of your life now. So you're doing a lot of coaching. Yeah. Coach Jimmy House is doing his thing. And before we went live, you were telling us about you've been training Goldberg's son, whose jersey you're wearing over there. Yeah. And also Mark Henry's son. Run us through your...
He had his El Pantero hat on. Did you notice that?
That's not...
That's El Pantero, man.
It is today.
Yeah. Anyway, so... And it, I bring this up. You seem to be an amazing coach.
Thank you.
CT here will tell you when he was training people, he was a terrible personal trainer.
Yeah, whatever.
But you, Jimmy House, seem to be amazing at it. So walk us through the coaching aspect of it and how much are you enjoying that part of your life now?
I love it because it allows me to do what I've been doing for the last 25 years and now be able to spread it to people that want to learn and want to better themselves. But the cool thing about it is because I've done a good handful of various practices, I have perspective from a few different fields, whether it's bodybuilding, whether it's powerlifting, whether it's mobility, athletics, or even something as niche as shirt curl, right? And so it's interesting because since I have done the jiu-jitsu and since I have done the wrestling, it's cool because it makes me more appealing to athletes that are very high level and successful in jiu-jitsu and wrestling. So as soon as I moved to Austin, I had the opportunity to work with the best hybrid jiu-jitsu athlete in the world right now, Nicholas Marigali. He's on New Wave. He was recovering from an injury currently. Okay. And then I also had the opportunity to work with Olympic judo gold medalist Satoshi Ishii, Gordon posts about him a lot. Yeah. But he's a legend, especially in Japan. So that was really cool because, you know, I do the jiu-jitsu and they know that I'm competent in jiu-jitsu and they see I do the lifting. So there's a little more trust there as opposed to just reaching out to a strength coach that can't relate to what they're doing.
Yeah.
The same thing applies for the wrestling. So, for example, Goldberg's son, obviously, Mark Henry's son, Jacob, Sting's son, Garrett Borden.
Oh,
I got to coach him. Yeah, I got to coach him online leading into Sting's retirement match where him and his brother came out and whatnot. So that was really cool. Ricky Saints, I got to work with a handful of AEW wrestlers online, Dante Martin, Bishop Khan.
Man.
And so, thank you. And so,
Bishop Khan I've been following that brother since he was wrestling in MLW back when I was in Maryland. I used to go see him all the time.
He's amazing.
He's amazing. Yeah. He's going to be, I'm telling you, Bishop Khan he's going to be that guy.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Yeah, I agree. He has a look, he has everything. We didn't work together for very long, but while we're out here in Texas at the same time, we got to get together once and talk about it, whatever.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I say all that because the coaching side of things has honestly played into my favor in ways I didn't expect it. Networking is huge, right? Yeah, and networking is everything, especially in wrestling. And it's allowed for very organic networking on my end, being able to provide my value of coaching what I know about strength training to people that are light years ahead of me in either in jiu-jitsu or wrestling. So there's like that mutual benefit that occurs. And from my standpoint, I try to do my best to make myself the most well-rounded athlete that I can, because I've always said this, I'm never going to be the best powerlifter, the best bodybuilder, the best strict curler, the best jiu-jitsu guy, the best pro wrestler, the best any of those things, but I can be the best Jimmy House. And Jimmy House is really, really, really good at a bunch of different things together. And I have a firm belief that the specific things that I've built my skills in, there's nobody else on the planet that can do it exactly like I can. And I say that as humbly as I can, but I say that with confidence because that's where I try to essentially have myself stick out when trying to appeal to these legendary or high level athletes. So it's been a really good process because in Arizona, I got to work with, you know, dads, moms, kids, and it was so cool. And it was great. If had that not happened, I wouldn't be here. Yeah. But then moving locations where it's easier to get my value noticed by people that have been at the top of their sport, it's a very interesting transition going from Arizona and then working with some of the best athletes literally in the world just by changing location. So it's allowed me to understand my value even greater and give me the push and motivation to try to seek that even further. So really the idea as we wrap up here with the coaching business initially was just to allow us to move to Austin and have ourselves a way to make income. But now as I go on, my biggest goal with it is to essentially build it up. And I had this conversation with you. You took your time. He took the time out of his day to meet me at Iron Addicts to talk to me one-on-one because I was in a spot where I had a lot of people doubting me and a lot of people were trying to get me in go different ways. And I asked him, like, how do I get to the point to where I can take my passions and be able to impact my friends and take care of them for the rest of my life? And CT gave me the advice and said a bunch of great things. And I've tried to use that advice now to build my business to a point to take care of my best friends that help me run it while I continue to build myself in wrestling to have that outreach to those children.
Did he say, fuck him?
He might have.
Fuck him. They doubt you, Jimmy. Fuck him. I can hear it now.
Jiu-jitsu wrestling. Jiu-jitsu versus wrestling. If you could only choose one, which would it be? Not professional wrestling. Amateur wrestling versus jiu-jitsu.
So the wrestling are my roots, and had it not been for wrestling, I would not have found jiu-jitsu, nor would I have gotten as good at jiu-jitsu as what I was. However, jiu-jitsu itself is what I found, I think, the most passion in, and then also where I started to learn the most about myself. So it's jiu-jitsu because it lasted longer. I just developed a lot more of a tie to it. Yeah. But the wrestling being my foundation, it's kind of hard to answer. I think ultimately at this point in my life, if I had to selfishly pick one or the other, it would be jiu-jitsu because you have the aspects of wrestling, but then you have the jiu-jitsu side that I really like as well, where you start to get a little bit more in depth with like submissions and so on and so forth. If it came down to jiu-jitsu and pro wrestling, personally, so this is where like pro wrestling is the first thing that I've done where it hasn't necessarily been on what I can achieve, is what can I do to have the impact on others, yeah, such as the kids, such as people like Goldberg. But for jiu-jitsu, that was like the most fun thing that I've pursued selfishly and things that I wanted to achieve for myself. And granted, I was very honored to have impact on others during that time, but professional wrestling, if I had to choose between the two, I choose pro wrestling because it's kind of been the main thing athletically that has allowed me to become much less selfish in the goals that I'm trying to pursue. Yeah. So it's just a different perspective.
So you want to be the good guy. You want to be mm-hmm. the guy the kids look up to. Mm-hmm. But what if?
Yeah, what if? Yeah.
What if the script is flipped?
Yep.
And Jimmy the heel has to come out. Can you handle that?
That's a good question based on everybody knows what's going on in the world of professional wrestling. We had yeah. John Cena, who's been
good guy for
the last 20-some-odd years, yeah. who just recently had a good heel turn here.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's a good question, Jimmy.
Yes. And so my first answer would be I think I would have a similar reaction than what Goldberg talks about when he had to turn heel very briefly. He absolutely hated it and quickly came back. Understanding that I'm not Goldberg and I probably don't have as much say as him, especially if I were to get to a higher level. Ultimately, it's not my decision. But if I look at that, it's kind of like long-term picture to me. And so a lot of times the reality is heel turns can really make somebody's career. And yeah. then by the time they become good guy again, they have even more of an impact than when they debuted as a good guy.
Roman Reigns, for example.
Right. Roman Reigns yeah. The Rock. Yeah. And so because of that, it's like initially I would be hesitant. Right. But ultimately, if I remember the main goal of what I'm trying to achieve without a particular time frame on it, it's like, okay, well, I could take advantage of this opportunity, make the most of it, build as much hype or fan base as I possibly can. So then that way, when I'm able to be a little bit more of my true self, it has an even bigger impact because I was able to get more eyes on me during that time as a bad guy. That's how I would have to look at it, because it's like, well, what am I going to do? Quit wrestling? Like, I mean, that doesn't allow me to achieve my goal either. So you just would have to just deal with it essentially. But I think, you know, even the heels, because of how wrestling is and because wrestling is more quote out there or quote exposed, at least there's an opportunity to have an understanding of like, oh, this is their character, but they may not be like that in real life. Right, you know, right. The kids still love Randy Orton and Triple H and guys like that. So I still think you can be that superhero, maybe not as clean as what I would like to, but there's still that opportunity to have kids look up to you in some capacity.
Yeah. So, look at Stone Cold. And he's sort of like, you know, in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah, literally.
And drinking beer and shit, and they love him to death.
So right. Two more quick questions for you, Jimmy. Then, so you've been running down your life to us today, and I'm sitting here listening to you, and I'm like, do you ever just wake up some days and everything just seems very surreal about everything you've been able to accomplish, all the people you've been able to connect with? And just seeing, like, I look at life as kind of like a tree, and you know, you talking about CT and how you meeting him has led to all this other amazing stuff that you're doing. Do you just wake up some days like, is this really my life? Like, does it ever feel surreal to you?
Not as much as maybe I should, but to that point, I'm very grateful and I'm very blessed. And it takes weekends like this where I get to get away a little bit from the stress and really think about how blessed I actually am to be able to have this conversation, be able to call you guys friends, to be able to do some of the stuff that I did yesterday and think back of all the different, say, sacrifices or things that I did even going back to my childhood that allowed these things to happen. Yeah. In my day-to-day life, though, with the stress of the business and the stress of, like, am I even going to amount to my goals and, like, am I even good at this thing or whatever, I'll be honest, I don't take the time to stop and think about it as much as I should. But that's why I'm very grateful for my fiance Claire and even my best friend Matt, that they help slow me down quite a bit, because I'm honestly like a dickhead when it comes to like my stress and trying to manage that and also being grateful at the same time. But my fiance has helped really bring me closer to God and really like lean on him and trust that his timing and his process and everything is as perfect as humanly possible or as godly possible, and allowing myself to slow down and think about that helps me a lot. And it allows me to think that there's nobody on earth, just like there's nobody on earth for in your guys' shoes, that have had your guys' experiences, that have had the impact that you guys had, that are allowed to do the things that you can do in your day-to-day life now. And I'm in the same shoes. My life is nor greater or worse than anybody's. It just is what it is. But the experience that I've had has allowed me to have a really, really cool and fulfilled life, and getting to be in the same rooms as people that have impacted millions of people. That's something that only pushes me to go further. And I hope we can come back to this conversation at some point and I can have with you guys and talk about how I've either made it or I'm closer to making it, because it's guys like you guys that push me to that starting point.
Jimmy, definitely will. You hear, goddamn it, Jimmy Howes is going to be a international superstar.
Thank you.
At wrestling.
All right, Jimmy. Thank so one last time. Question, and this is something new that we're bringing to the show. And we asked the Hurt Syndicate yesterday, but we're going to ask you why you're here. So we're going to end the show a different way. So one last question, and you got to answer it. Jimmy Howes, if you could slap the shit out of one person, past or present, who would it be? No repercussions. You just get to slap the shit out of them. Who would Jimmy Howes slap the shit out of?
Living or dead, don't matter.
Matt, you think I'm going to say you? Shit. Let's see. Who
this
do
is
I?
A hard question for people. Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't hard for MVP.
Well, not MVP, but
maybe I just like Goldberg mark it out and say that maybe I just slap Bret Hart because I didn't want to get Goldberg talking all this shit. But really, I don't mean that. Like, but I was forced. I was pressured. But I got Goldberg's back till the end.
All right. Whatever. Ladies and gentlemen. Before we go. IronAddictsBrands.com. All your official CT Fletcher merchandise you got to get from IronAddictsBrands.com. If you get the shit from any place else, the shit is a fake. Also, father and son trainers. If you like to do a father and son training with CT and Samson, you can either do it at Iron Addicts Gym or you can do it in the backyard. As Pops always say, what you tell them? Shit ain't what?
Shit ain't free.
So if you're interested in the father-son training, hit up Samson Fletcher at Samson Fletcher Official on IG, and he will get you taken care of. Ladies and gentlemen, we had an amazing time today. We want to thank the amazing Jimmy House for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
Brother, let me just say this, man. Like I said, the past few weeks just getting to talk to you and learn more about you, you're an amazing human being, man. I hope we can continue to grow this friendship, man. I am honored to know you and see the stuff that you're doing.
Likewise.
For somebody that's, like I said, almost 47 years old, you make me tired watching you all. But it's absolutely amazing. So congratulations to you. We also to get to touch on, you just recently won your first title.
Yes. Yeah.
You are now the official heavyweight champion.
Yeah, the Rhodes Wrestling Association.
There you go. Yeah. So congratulations to you on that one. And I know you are going to do amazing things in the future. So continue to be a friend of the show. You got an open door policy. So whatever you got going on, if we can promote you, put some extra shine on you, whatever we can do to help you,
thank you, guys.
You got it with us, man. So ladies and gentlemen, that was another edition of the F Y'all podcast. And we're going to end this show like we do every show.
Fuck y'all.